Angry video game nerd at all, though?
I haven't watched him in a while.
He actually had Macaulay Culkin on the last episode.
Oh, did he?
It's fantastically hilarious.
Because Macaulay Culkin just did a Home Alone spoof with Google for Google Assistant.
It's weird that he suddenly started showing up, but because it's also podcast. Here. It's also here on Slash Film. You probably have it as well. Macaulay Culkin is home alone again for Google's Assistant's new holiday shenanigans. But for an angry video game nerd, he shows up as a pizza guy at the beginning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he literally is wearing a jacket that just says pizza guy. And he's literally delivering
an all cheese pizza.
No, all it's a because more people for Angry Video Game Nerd have been asking for him to be do reviews of all the other Home Alone games. Like, he's done a couple, but he hasn't done all of them.
Okay, great use of your fucking time.
Well, he's the Angry Video Game.
Yeah, but the games are fucking terrible.
Oh no, they are terrible.
Yeah, I know. I've played most of them.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was any Home Alone games. Dude.
Oh, I don't. There's probably. I think there's like 14 different. Well, I say 14 different ones, even though a couple of them are literally just clones of each other.
They're ports from like one place to the other.
Yeah, different systems.
One's on Game Boy. One's on Nintendo.
But it's funny. So he gets them to sit down and play some more of these games, and they keep playing up the fact that obviously, it's an act that he doesn't know who Macaulay Culkin is, but he's like, "Hey, you look familiar. I know you. You played the pizza guy in Home Alone." And he's just like, "Yeah, the pizza guy.
Nice.
It's fucking hilarious. I'd suggest going and watch it. Just also because the games were awful.
They're so fucking terrible.
So fucking terrible. But to watch them looking back on them is even worse. Like, I never even played I played the game for the first one. On the SNES, I think it was, which basically had you. It's dumb in retrospect.
Of course.
Like, when I was a kid and playing it,
you're like, "Oh my god, it's amazing!"
I don't even think I thought it was amazing. Good, it was just a side-scrolling. You used a. I don't know. I don't remember what it was. You threw stuff at the bad guys or whatnot, but basically you were going around the house trying to collect certain things. Like, so one level was trying to collect toys, one level was trying to collect treasures and stuff like that. And then for some reason you would deposit them into a trash chute that led to a vault in the basement, which doesn't make any sense because there was nothing like that in Home Alone.
Well, the laundry chute in the movie.
But no, like, it literally went to a vault.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
In the basement.
Unfortunately.
But I remember playing that one and like, okay, that wasn't too bad. But then the one for Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, was fucking atrocious. I've never even seen it played until then. And you have like mops floating in the air attacking you. You have like angry little old white ladies attacking you with umbrellas. You have people in suits that would just do damage to you. It made absolutely no fucking sense at all. Whatsoever. Yeah.
It's pretty fucking terrible. Pretty fucking terrible.
I will say, McCulkin looks better than what he used to. Like, he had some time there where he was...
On the drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because he's still super, like, eccentric and weird. But, like, artsy weird in a way.
Yeah.
And, like, he has this, his podcast, I can't remember what it's called. Or
Bunny Ears.
It's Bunny Ears, right? Yeah. And him and the guy he does it with, they wear bunny ears.
Is it an audio podcast?
No, they do video, too.
Okay.
I mean, they do an audio podcast, but they do video and stuff, too. But they're all over the place. It's weird, because, like, he showed up on Ellen, like, recently.
Okay, I didn't
like,
see that.
It's a bunch of weird shit, just because, like... Home Alone's like getting ready to celebrate some kind of anniversary or some nonsense.
Is it?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
Maybe it'll say here.
So 1990. Jesus Christ, really?
That's when Home Alone 1 came out?
Oh my god, it's almost 30 years old.
How many?
Almost 30 years old.
Oh.
Holy shit. That's fucking ridiculous.
Wow.
Ouch. That hurts my soul to even do the math on that.
What I want you to do is next time you go into work is ask how many of your people that you work with have seen the original Home Alone.
I don't want to.
I do.
Oh, if you want to watch it on Encore Classics at 4:35 a.m., they're going to be playing it.
I'm good.
4:35 a.m.
I'm pretty sure we have the VHS version of this somewhere.
I'm sure you do.
VHSs are making a comeback.
Yeah, so
yeah, they are.
I mean, I just got a VHS for Christmas.
Yeah, you did. Speaking of VHSs for Christmas, comes naturally, we are...
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. Welcome to the show, everybody. That was a really long... That was a good 5 minutes.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Anyhow, what's up, fellas? Hey. Merry Christmas, in a way.
Merry Christmas, Merry motherfuckers.
Motherfuckers.
Well, this will be our last episode before Christmas.
It will be.
So.
Christmas is on Tuesday.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yep. Welcome to our Christmas Spectacular episode.
Yeah, where we're talking about
all things Christmas.
Spider-Man.
Oh. Now we're talking about Home Alone, obviously.
We're talking about Spider-Man. Shit. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Mike, Cody. Since you and I have seen it.
Yeah, you guys go for it. I have not seen it yet.
You can ask questions if you want. We'll try to answer them. Mike, what'd you think?
I liked it a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. Arguably the best Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. Easily.
Like, I don't like, I want to say that. I want to see things a couple times and see if they hold up well, you know, before I say it's the best of anything. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, like, in the I'm interested to see, like, after I see it again when some time has passed, to see where I put it amongst all the other Spider-Man movies.
So as of right now, without that one in your list, what are your top three Spider-Man movies?
Homecoming. The first Amazing Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2.
You put Amazing Spider-Man above Spider-Man 2?
I loved the first Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay. That, mine was going to be that very Spider-Man similar to yours, but
was straight out of comic books with the snarky comments.
Oh, of course.
He was so much better as Spider-Man than I thought Tobey Maguire was as Spider-Man. That I thought just his charisma, even his movements, you know, he's a little bit longer, a little bit lengthier. But more of his smart ass remarks and everything and the banter while he was fighting, I loved. And I loved the fact that I'm coming from this place now where I want my comic book movies to be more like comic books, because we've had so many grounded, quote unquote, realistic comic book movies that I want shit to look like the comics. So when they gave me a giant lizard, I was like, yes, that's I like that shit. Hey, give me more of that, you know? You know what I mean? Like, as great as the Nolan Batman trilogy is, it kind of fucked comic book movies. You know what I mean? Because now everyone wants
fantastical villains.
Yeah, everyone wants realistic, you know, grounded. I'm like, nah, man, that's not the point of them. Like, because I've said it before, those Batman movies could have been a fucking any random spy, you know what I mean, and change a few details.
Well, yeah, they'd be comparable more to like the crime mafia type movies, Heat or something like that.
Yeah, that's why I love The Amazing Spider-Man, the first one. But Homecoming, there's so much else, so much stuff leading into it, it'd be really hard to top Homecoming. Because not only is that Spider-Man snarky, it has the good quips and great action sequences, is his Peter Parker is really good too. So it kind of, and then Tony Stark is in it. So anytime Robert Downey Jr. is in a movie,
right,
dialogue driven right roles, it always helps. So right now it's Homecoming, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2. But I feel like this is for sure going to bump Spider-Man 2 for me. Pretty sure it's going to bump Amazing, but like it's in the conversation for number one right now. But I've seen Homecoming a couple times. I've only seen Spider-Verse once, so I'm gonna wait, but it's up there.
So what's your three favorite and one surprise?
Three favorite is just
you knew this was coming.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting because like my surprise is kind of like one of my favorite things. It's there's a lot of things I like
you
about
can
this.
You can combo them up.
So I'll say that one for the last. My first favorite thing is just the inclusion of all these different Spider-Men. Spider things?
No. Nope.
Spider creatures?
Spider.
Well, there's a spider ham.
Spider beings.
Spider beans.
Yeah.
Let's be correct. Let's include everybody.
That's right.
Yeah, it was cool because, like, never in 100 years did I think I was going to see Spider Ham in a movie. Like, in a movie theater, watching a movie and see a Spider Ham on screen.
And to realize that it's being voiced by John Mulaney.
Yeah,
who know, is. You didn't know that that's Spider Ham.
So fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Spider. Like, I never had a definitive voice, and it's not like I'm fucking deep into the catalogs of Spider Ham or anything right. like that, but I was very aware of him. And I never realized what the voice would be. I never got that into it. But after Mulaney doing it, it's like, oh, Mulaney is Spider-Ham forever. Like, mm-hmm. if Spider-Ham ever gets brought back, you need to have Mulaney come back yeah. and do the voice for it. He's just perfect for it. I mean, having the old noir-style Spider-Man be Nick Cage
is just... Yeah, how did that go? I didn't know about that until later.
So fucking fantastic.
Because it's so...
Like, I'm still going through this list right now, and I didn't know that Liv Schreiber was in there was yeah. in the movie as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cast, and that'll be, it kind of goes on, but that'll be my second favorite. My first favorite thing is the inclusion of all these different spider beings is crazy because you can't do that in a live action movie. You can't have all of these characters in a live action movie. I say that, it'll probably happen someday.
Well, you could, but you wouldn't be able to have this type of voice talent.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So that kind of leads into number two is the cast itself. I mean, Jake Johnson, Nick Cage, Liev Schreiber, John Mulaney. Just Jesus Christ.
Lily Tomlin.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. All over the place. They're all so great. My third favorite thing about it is actually the animation style because it's so different. And again, going back to, I want my comic book movies to look like a comic book every now and then. This looks like the most perfect way to pull off a comic book to the big screen. And it was a different art style than what I'm used to seeing in terms of animation. It wasn't Pixar, it wasn't just a 2D animation. It was this weird digital thing that kind of looks odd the first time you see the trailer. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I remember watching the first trailer and going, it doesn't look great. It looks really weird. It looks like yeah. they tried too much to get it to be like a comic book. But then as they showed more trailers, it looked much better.
Yeah, and I think they probably made it look better since the first release, but also just seeing it and being used to it. Because even the first couple minutes of the movie, you're like, oh, fuck, this is kind of weird. But then it settles in and it kind of goes away, like the oddness of it. And it just looks really, really good. And so my surprise thing to it, it's kind of also a favorite, but it's the story of it. It's so well written. I mean, to include all of these characters, still have Miles be your main focus, which is great that Miles is the main focus of this. And then should I even say about the...
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
The what?
The Peter Parker? Not Peter B. Parker?
Oh, Peter Parker, yeah.
So, watching the trailers... You're like, oh, Jake Johnson, he's doing Spider-Man, that's cool.
Because they fuck with you in the trailer.
They do. Because in the movie...
Well, I'm seeing that Chris Pine actually plays
Chris Peter Pine Parker. Is the good Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But Chris he's the Spider-Man from Miles' universe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he is on top of his shit. He's everything you think Spider-Man to be. Jake Johnson is Peter B. Parker.
Yeah.
From an alternate who is still a kick-ass Spider-Man, but his life is kind of crumbling away, and he's a little bit of a slob now, and he's kind of a fuck-up now, mm-hmm. which is like, oh, yeah, that's Jake Johnson, which is kind of sad that's how you have to have Jake Johnson be a Spider-Man. Nick if Nick from New Girl was Spider-Man, this that's is,
exactly what he
this is. This is it.
Nice.
Mary Jane left him.
But the I like movies that, if story-wise, they want to get you invested early... Some movies will use a tactic, will give you a big shock early on to let you know that, like, things aren't, you know, like, one couple examples, like killing the dog in John Wick.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're instantly like this fucking killer guy that you know is a fucking crazy killer dude. You're on his side from that point forward. There's, he can do no wrong anymore. The Krasinski scary movie.
Quiet Place?
Quiet Place.
Oh, and the kid gets...
Yeah, when the kid gets taken early on, you're like, well, nobody's safe. If they kill the kid in the first 2 minutes of the movie, nobody's safe. So you have to be on your toes. Like, any of these motherfuckers could die. This one, Spider-Man dies. He doesn't... It's not... He gets trapped. He gets locked away, and they're trying to save him. No, man. The good Spider-Man in Miles' universe dies. And Miles is right there, and he has powers, and he probably could have done something, but he doesn't know how to use any of his powers yet and doesn't understand, and he's just a kid. Mm-hmm. So he's scared shitless. And he has to carry that with him through the whole movie, that in his head, he let Spider-Man die.
Wow, that's heavy.
And it's super fucked, dude. And Miles in this movie is just getting shit thrown on him the whole time. Like, high level, like, emotional shit that he's having to deal with, and having to deal with being a fucking, learning how to adjust to having his powers and control them, and knowing that, like, he has to be a hero now. He can't just have these things. And which is funny too, because they kind of play up the great power comes great responsibility, but they don't actually ever say it at any point. Like, they start saying it and they cut him off because it's kind of played out a little bit, but it makes it funny. But, like, that is the underlying kind of theme to this, is he knows he has to do this, but it's really fucking hard, and he has no support system except for all the other spider beings coming in, and he kind of...
Now, how do they come in? What's it's introduced to
King, so particle Kingpin. Accelerator
yeah.
uh-huh. is used. Well, two of them are used. They fire each other, and there's a mechanism they're using that basically, when the particles hit, they separate the atoms, and when it opens a basically a gate to parallel universes. Uh-huh. That's what the basic thing is. It's a quantum entanglement thing that basically lets them go through. And the whole premise is, you find out later, that Kingpin is obsessed with the knowledge that there is these other ones, and he's trying to bring back his dead wife and son.
Okay, so I think I vaguely remember some storyline like that from
the
Spider-Man cartoon
series. And so in this one, he has a son and his wife, and they are like, I'm pretty sure his wife knows, but his son is very out of the loop that he's a criminal and a mob boss, basically. And, like, one of the worst ones. And Peter, Spider-Man, shows up one time to basically foil something he's doing, and they get in a big fight, and his wife and his son walk in at him beating Spider-Man almost to death, basically. They run off. Spider-Man gets away because Kingpin is distracted. They get killed in a car accident fleeing from Kingpin.
Okay.
And so, in a way, he definitely blames Spider-Man, because it's not his fault. Obviously, you know, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, you know, is the fault for this. So he basically dumps money and resources into making this plan. And he's going to use this to bring another universe's version of his wife and kid back to him.
Wow.
Completely and utterly selfish in the way. And when they do this, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, basically spoils it for him again, and when he's trying to turn it off, something happens, and Peter gets dipped into the quantum entanglement. And the way it's working is, that little device they have is supposed to have DNA references in it, and it's supposed to find versions of them. Well, it finds other versions of Parker and pulls them into the dimension. And so they get ripped out of their dimension into theirs. But the problem is, there was an issue with it. So it's not just pulling Peter Parker, it's pulling Peter Parker-ish beings from other places. That's where you get Peter Parker from the 1930s, which is Spider-Man Noir. You get Peter B. Parker, because essentially they're the same person.
Yeah.
You get Penny Parker, who is the manga version, who's actually Peter's daughter in the future, in 2093, I think they said, right?
Something like that, no.
You get Peter Porker, who is known in his universe, which is a cartoon universe, as just Peter, and he's a spider who gets bit by a radioactive pig and becomes Spider-Ham.
That's fantastic.
Known as Peter Porker.
Yeah.
And then you have Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen, because, again, it's not pulling his DNA, it's pulling the Spider-Man, the spider DNA, essentially. And she's, in her universe, she's the, because if you know anything about Spider-Gwen, she's the one that gets bit by the spider, and her best friend, Peter, ends up dying because of what she does.
Yeah,
switching roles, obviously.
Yeah, swaps
roles. So she's the spider person from her universe, so she gets pulled across. And, of course, Miles is in his already. And so, shortly after that, Kingpin smashes Peter Parker to death.
Yeah,
with his bare hands.
So that's how he dies?
Yep, he's pretty fucked up already because he goes through.
But Kingpin essentially wins.
He kills him for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's also they're kind of in that situation because Spider-Man had to save Miles.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know what I mean? So
this wasn't just like a fight that he was losing. This
was putting Miles ahead of everything else.
So an accident happens. The particle accelerators blow up, essentially causing the building to kind of go into rumbles, and he gets hit by a bunch of it and gets crushed, and basically is like, he acts like he's not in bad shape, but he can't even stand up.
Mm.
He's like, no, just run, I'm gonna distract him, you know, whatever. And then Tombstone, Kingpin, and the Prowler walk over, and they're about to kill him, and then Peter mouths off and enrages Kingpin, and he smashes him.
Damn.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. I was like,
what was the rating on the show?
PG?
PG?
They didn't show it. They showed it from Kingpin's back.
Gotcha.
But you know exactly what he does.
From Miles' point of view, which is up kind of hiding.
Uh-huh.
And you still see, and Kingpin is animated at this
massive
human. Massively fucking 6-foot broad shoulders.
Him as like the, again, the cartoon.
So
he's still
he's just head and then
so
the shoulders.
He comes up and he just smashes him. And like I said, Peter Parker's already super fucked at this point anyway, so it didn't take a lot to finish it. But Miles gets away, and then you're like, did Spider-Man just die? And then it like cuts to his funeral, and like they're announcing it on the news and stuff.
And Aunt May's there, and at that time in that universe, Peter's married to MJ.
Okay,
and so they're basically thanking him for coming out and honoring him, because it comes out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man was Spider-Man, so it's now announced. And then so Aunt May and Mary Jane come out and like thank everyone, you know, and everyone's like completely awestruck that this 26-year-old guy has been Spider-Man, and he's like essentially a nobody because like, you know, he's a scientist and I think they even tell him he's a freelance photographer.
Yeah.
And they're like, he is better like known as he is Spider-Man. And then at that point you realize that he's been Spider-Man for like 15 years, and everyone's like, holy shit, like he was a kid.
Yeah.
Like for the last 15
I think
years.
They even say, I think it was 10, right?
It's 15.
Like, was it 15?
Yeah. Cuz him and Peter B. Parker have the same timeline.
No, Peter B. Parker's older.
That's what I mean. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Peter B. Parker's been Spider-Man for 15 years.
Yeah.
Peter's been Spider-Man for 10 years.
Okay.
Because he is older, because he's 30-something.
No.
Like 32, 37, something, 35, in that range. And what's crazy is Chris Pine's Peter Parker, the one from Miles' universe, the 1610 universe, he is a composite of all the versions of Spider-Man we've seen in film.
Okay.
So the Tobey Maguire, the Andrew Garfield, and the
Tom Holland. Yeah, they throw little shout-outs to the
movies. So they show all of them. So he's done a lot of the big things, like the whole walking down the street finger guns things.
The dancing scene?
That's him.
And he even says,
yeah, he's like,
that?
we don't talk about that, though.
Okay, good.
So if you watch the trailer, you'll hear Jake Johnson doing the voiceover for that stuff, like, I have a comic book and I have cereal. That's actually in the movie. It's Chris Pine saying that.
Yeah, which really threw me off, because I was like, this don't sound like Jake Johnson.
I figured it out right away. I was like, that's Chris Pine.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was in it until I was like, that's Chris Pine. It was crazy when Kingpin unmasks him, he's blonde.
Oh.
And right away you're like, that's definitely not, because I've seen
that. Yeah, well, you know, because you're watching, you're like, well, it's definitely not Jake Johnson. And so this is different. And like, who's training him? And then you bring in all the other worlds. And what's weird, too, is because this Spider-Man is like the Spider-Man we know as like a comic book reader and comic book fans. Uh-huh. So you're expecting it to be like, all right, well, that's this world. This is the world we're dealing in. Things are going to look this way. But it's like in Peter B. Parker's world, that's the what you would think Doc Ock looks like. In this world, it's a different Doc Ock. Mm-hmm. So the villains are... They like switch around who the villains and some of the things are and some of the stories from different universes. So you don't know exactly what universe you're in. So things could be a little bit different, a little bit weirder, and it's all kind of already worked into it.
It's very because Miles they take so the Peter Parker that Chris Pine plays in Miles' universe, that is mainly based on the Marvel Ultimate Universe, like Ultimate Spider-Man world, where Green Goblin's an actual real goblin.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And everything's more a little more technologically advanced. Prowler has a suit that he wears that allows him to do things like see infrared, blah, 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 all these things, right? But everything's a little more fantastical, too. Like, Tombstone literally looks like a corpse. Doc Ock, like Mike was saying, is actually Olivia Octavius.
Okay.
They completely made it all new Doc Ock suit, and it was fucking amazing because it was this weird like gel filled exosuit that came out and the arms changed sizes and formed into these weird little like,
so they weren't so much like static pieces of metal.
No, they were like
more of just like a goo type thing,
but inside of like a some kind of like
a tube
sheath or something. Yeah.
Okay. So it kept it together, but it would shape shift how it needed to, to shape shift.
It would get bigger if it needed to or stretch out. It was super like it was cool.
There's a scene where they're chasing him like through the woods and it like wraps around and like takes a tree out. Like it just kind of like goos up a tree and moves it. Yeah. It's really weird.
It's fucking crazy. I was like, oh, well done. Well done. So there's that, and then and speaking of the animation, I have to cut Mike off for his last thing.
Done.
Would you say your surprise thing? Done. All right, whatever.
Yeah, you finished.
It's fine. Cool.
Yeah, your surprise. Yeah.
The thing about me when he's talking about animation, one of my favorite things about it was because like you, I watched that very first one they released like 2 years ago or whatever it was. It seems like, and the animation was really rough.
Yeah.
Now, it obviously has gotten much better as the process went through, and even the later trailer those sections look different. And I was like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. It looks awesome because they're making it this 3D world, but it's using almost like a newsprint look to it and things like that. But the crazy thing is the other spider beings are animated differently.
Yes.
So Peter Porker, Spider-Ham, looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
And everything about him looks like a cartoon. Spider-Man Noir is in black and white.
Which was dope.
He's not like just a black suit. He's literally black and white. You never see him without the mask on, but he's literally monochrome.
Yeah.
Penny Parker, the anime, the manga one, she's drawn manga style and animated manga style. She's flat.
Okay.
It's really fucking weird. The suit she drives in, the spider suit, is 3D, but it's obviously designed to be that way. And even Gwen Stacy's animated differently. And when you see her as Gwanda, she goes by, because she doesn't want to tell her real name, because she doesn't know if Gwen Stacy exists in this universe.
Because
when she first meets Miles, she's at the school. Because when she gets pulled across, she's actually a week ahead. So she gets pulled a week behind in time. So she has the time. She's trying to figure things out. So she enrolls in the school and pretends to be a new student. And that's how they interact. But she's animated differently even then.
Okay.
But no one notices because it just looks like another human. Just, you know, a little whatever, like different. But when they stand, you can see that even animated differently. But like Peter B. Parker is not that differently animated.
Yeah.
But like it's phenomenal the way they do it. But the like Mike said, the story is phenomenal. They don't load it down with a lot of stuff, but they give you everything you need to learn. And the best way they do it is that same thing you have in the trailer where you hear Jake Johnson talking about all the things he's done. That is their way of telling you their history. So it's giving you everything they learn. You learn everything about them from that little thing. And it slaps down a comic book and says, I'm the Amazing Spider-Man, and he does all these feats. And then same thing for Spider-Gwen, for Peter Porker, Spider-Ham, for Penny, all that stuff. They do that same thing.
Okay.
So they give you that quick run-through of who they are. But the action sequences, by far, an animated movie is going to definitely give you the capability to do things you couldn't do in a normal movie. Marvel and the newer Marvel movies and even the DC movies are definitely getting to that point with the CG and capabilities of motion capture and things like that to be able to do a convincing Hulk, for example, fighting a Thor.
Yeah.
You know, they're flying around, or a bunch of robots like an Ultron, things like that. But there's one thing that Spider-Man, even in Homecoming, you just can't do for the most part. And Homecoming did a really good job at it.
Oh, yeah.
Him pulling, you know, doing the whole thing. He's pulling the ship back together. He's lifting the rubble off of himself. He's fighting Vulture in the sky and all that stuff. It was amazing. But this just ramps it up to, like true comic book levels. And so you get that fantastical and you get that beyond human capability motion. Okay. Like, when Peter Parker's fighting to basically stop the particle accelerators for the first time, he's moving unlike any human definitely can move. But like, there's these perspectives, the camera flip around where it's facing him, but he's actually on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But you're facing him like you're in his perspective, so it looks like the floor.
Yeah.
And then also you see him crawling along the roof. But then other things, like they're literally walking on walls and running on buildings. That's sideways, cool. Like they're running on the ground.
Okay.
So, like, if there's a way you can do it. Like, there's a whole conversation between Peter B. Parker and Miles when Miles tells him what's going on and says he has this doodad, which is hilarious the way they explain it because it's a USB drive.
Okay.
And it turns out that multiple spider beings call it a doodad from their own universe. And even the one here, which Miles thought he called it, like, this thing, Aunt May calls it a doodad.
Goober.
I'm sorry, goober.
Is that, yeah.
And so you realize, like, even that Peter is a goofball, and he says, right. This is a key, you know, you have to keep it safe, this will shut the machine down, and it ends up getting broken, so she's like, let me see the goober, and right then you're like, oh shit, like, Peter B. Parker and Peter Parker aren't that far apart, just one applied himself more and didn't fall into a depression and become a fat slob,
yeah,
like the other one did. So I was like, that's really fucking hilarious. But so there's a part when Peter B. Parker is having a conversation and he's literally walking down a wall and Miles is trying to follow him, but he can't control his powers enough, so he can't stick fully. Uh-huh. So he's sliding. And then one of the neighbors sees him and they're like, out the window, he's like, what the hell's going on? Because like, this guy's just walking up the wall.
Yeah.
And as he gets to the top, he just literally walks over the top. And Miles is like slowly trying to walk up the wall. That's so funny.
All right.
Yeah. The humor is amazing in it. Like Mike said, the characters are phenomenal. The voice cast was stupendous. And like, hearing Chris Pine as Spider-Man from Miles of the Universe of 1610 was amazing. I was like, oh shit. Like, right away I was like, clearly not Jake Johnson. Clearly that's Chris Pine for yeah. sure. Like, right away. And of course, just the intro to all the spider beings when it first does it, his first one, and then the second one you get is Peter B. Parker, and you get Spider Gwen's, and you get the other ones. So you get Noir, Penny, and then Peter Parker. But just the way they do them is just so fantastic because they're exact same thing, but their history versus everybody else's, and it's just so much fun because you're like, you get that intro. But it's super hilarious the entire time. And one of the best parts is having, like, you ask about Nicolas Cage being Peter Parker from 1930s. He talks like Humphrey Bogart does and all the things. Like, when they go to fight, he even says, like, what's he say, Mike? He's like, he, like, throws up the dukes like he's going to, like, old-style boxing.
Yeah, he says something about, like, they're going to come at you hard, real biscuit throwers or something like that. Like,
yeah, like, just ridiculousness. And it's like... And the whole fact that the way they animate him is there's always a wind blowing on him, but it's always going the same direction.
Yeah, I remember somewhere, I don't know if it
there's
was
a in clip the, they show yeah, where clip. It's like why they introduce it, him. Yeah,
yeah, but they were like, somebody made the statement of like, you know, there's no wind coming from anywhere.
Yeah,
why is
we're inside. Yeah,
yeah,
and he's like, the wind goes where right. or the wind is wherever I'm at or something like that. Yeah, and then one point they're literally on the side of a building and the wind's blowing into the building, but his coat's going the other way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's always going that it's little things like that. Just like, it's so amazing. And it's like, every time he speaks, it's in that Nicolas Cage draw, but like a dude from the 1930s would talk, like that film noir type private detective, because he's a private detective. The way they talk and that mannerism, talks like that, and everything he says, no matter what it is.
All right,
it's just phenomenal the way they did it. I mean, the list of voice actors: Zoe Kravitz as Mary Jane Watson. You have Lily Tomlin as May Parker. Just the spider people themselves, the spider beings. Shameik Moore as Miles Morales, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, Chris Pine as 1610's Peter Parker, Spider-Man, Haley Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy. Nicolas Cage,
John Mulaney,
Leif Schreiber. Leif Schreiber, I could not figure out who it was when I was hearing Kingpin, because I didn't know he was playing Kingpin at the time. And I'm listening, and it does not sound like him. He does this heavy New York accent, and I was like, I don't know who this was. And it got to the credits, I was like, oh fuck, that's who it was.
And he has a distinct voice.
Yeah, very much so. And it does not sound like him at all. And if anyone says it does, maybe I just don't know his voice well enough. But everything I know him from does not sound like that.
Okay.
Like he played the voice of Kingpin the way you imagine Kingpin would speak.
Okay.
It was amazing. And then the surprise one, which I'll ruin it for everybody who doesn't know, is the appearance of another spider being that was not featured in it, and that's Spider-Man 2099.
Oh, yeah.
So an end credit scene, which is a twofold thing. One is, as Mike said, a whole setup. The whole movie is basically a setup for them to do the Spider-Man meme from the 1960s cartoon, where it's Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah,
the whole thing leads to that, because you find out that in the end credit scene that, that him and his sister are responsible for the device that Kingpin's using to open the dimensions, but they know how to use it and they can make it work properly where it's not unstable and they're not going to die from cellular degeneration. Because that's the whole thing of why the spider people have to get back to where they're coming from, not just because they don't want to live in one universe.
Okay.
Because they have real lives everywhere else they go. It turns out that it was their device and that they can control it. And he's going to, just like they do in the comic books, he's going to use it to go back and link up with all the Spider-Mans from the different universes and make a Spider-Verse out of it.
Okay.
So it's him that's doing it. So he literally goes, he's like, I'm going to go back to the beginning. And so he turns the device on and he appears animated like the old 1960s cartoon, but looks like Spider-Man 2099, and instead of being Spider-Man looking like Spider-Man and Spider-Man looking like Spider-Man, it's 2099 facing that one, but animated in that style with the whole jaw-moving animation thing. Phenomenal setup.
This is
the dumbest joke ever.
God damn.
But you realize the whole movie is setting up for that one fucking scene to play off of the most famous Spider-Man meme, and it's just the most ridiculous thing ever. But Oscar Isaac plays him.
Oh, shit.
Him. Yeah.
God damn, that's not even on this list.
Yeah, he's listed as, like, interesting person one.
Yeah. Oh, is that?
Yeah, yeah, he's listed in there. So
in the credits, he's listed, but you won't know what it is.
But there's a handful of celebrity cameos in that, too. Like, Post Malone does a voice because he was on the soundtrack. And a couple other people.
Well, then Greta Lee is listed as interesting person number two.
Who's that's his sister.
With? That's his sister. Yeah. Okay.
No.
Yep. And then Stan Lee has a cameo in it, which is phenomenal.
It's Aztan.
Aztan,
yeah.
But he basically is running a comic shop, and people are, after the death of Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, they're coming in to buy Spider-Man outfits to wear the masks at the funeral and stuff, and then that's when Miles actually gets his first costume. That's why it looks like a child's costume, because it is. There's even some emotional scenes in it too, like when Peter B. Parker, they finally convince, like, so Spider Gwen and Miles convince him to go to the only place that they know he's going to be, which is Aunt May's house, and so he goes up and like he rings the doorbell, which is a really funny way because he shoots a web at it and it hits the doorbell and he goes,
it does it a few times in the movie. That's just how he rings doorbells.
But he's like, no, I can't do it. And he starts to walk away and they grab him and he's like, and she opens the door and instantly I was like.
Because you find out that his Aunt May died already.
Ooh. Yeah, so he doesn't
have
his
Aunt May. Mary Jane, they divorced. They were married and they divorced. That's what led to him being kind of a broken down fucking loser.
Yeah, so she sees him and she instantly knows, like, oh, yeah, you're not my Peter Parker.
Yeah. And even she was referenced, she's all like, a little bit older, a little bit heavier. Yeah. And he's like, I've heard that a lot today.
And then she even says, like, so what universe are you from? And you're like, what the fuck? Like, how does she know?
And you find out, like, Spider-Man's like lair is in Aunt May's like backyard in a shed and goes down.
That line was fantastic. Yeah. Because he goes like, I have one of these in my backyard, and then like, she hits a button and the lock, which just looks like a padlock, lights up, and then a spider emblem glows out of the door. It opens up and it's an elevator. He goes, that's just showing off. And then like they go down this elevator, and then you realize why she knows there's other dimensions, because the others, that's where they meet the other spider beings.
The other three had already gone straight there.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to get anything else.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where they intro the other three. That's where they know Noir, Ham, and Penny.
Okay.
Is there. And that's why she knows. But that's when you go down and it's like essentially like a bat cave. But it's a spider cave. So instead of being bats everywhere, it's just spider webs. It's really fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But he has the light up boxes with all the different outfits in it, and it runs the gamut of like one that has a cape, which was a super fun payoff, because at one point when they're designing outfits, Miles has a cape on and Peter's like, no capes, Spider-Man doesn't have a cape.
And then so he goes, take this off, it's hey. Disrespectful.
Yeah. He's like, hey, is this a cape? And he has a cape and has the tall collar. But then there's like the accelerator suit from the new Spider-Man game is in it.
Okay.
So that's in there. There's like the stealth suit is in there. Like all different ones that are, it just line up is pretty cool. Very Batman, like, you know, yeah. Batcave type setup.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's
all the different spider vehicles.
You see the spider jeeps in there.
Yeah.
You see a spider plane, a spider boat, spider the
motorcycle.
Bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has the sidecar in it. It's super fantastic.
Gross.
What else was there? I guess it's, I mean, like Mike said, the most of this one, it focuses for the most part on Miles and Miles' universe. So you spend a lot of times with Miles before he gets bit by the spider. And the spider, when he gets bit by number 42, it's a little different setup. Like Mike said, it's a little tweaked differently than everything else. So everything in this is a little bit different than it is in the Ultimate Comics one. So instead of the spider might have come from his uncle, because in the comic books, the spider is in a bag that his uncle Aaron, who's aka the Prowler, has, because he just got done breaking into the laboratory, and the spider gets in the bag, and when he's back at his house, Miles goes over to see him against his parents' will, and the spider bites him. The difference in this, they're down in a abandoned section of the subway that his uncle Aaron knows about.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he's been there before, because there's a boombox down there and all sorts of shit. So it's kind of like a safe house in a way. So you realize, like, oh, that must how the spider got there.
Yeah.
That's when he gets bit for the first time. And that scene's even really funny, because you see it, it's building up, and it bites into him, and he's going to have this shocked look on his face, and it cuts to him, and he goes, and slaps it off his hand and just wipes
it. But it builds up so well, because you see the bite, and it goes like to an x-ray vision, and you see like poison going into his system, and you can tell it's like slow down time, and it's like infecting his whole body.
But then it cuts away,
and Miles is like, and flicks it off, and there's no like nothing to do with it.
Yeah, there's no big like, oh my god, I get bit by a spider.
Well, because that's usually how it is played up. Yep. Even back to the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, I remember him just being like, you know, ah, and
he's almost sweaty. Yeah, he does the same thing, because he goes through what he thinks is puberty.
Yeah.
And he starts to sweat a bunch, and he's sticking to everything, which is super hilarious, because like, that's how they get Gwen Stacy her undercut haircut, is he sticks to her, and they have to shave the side of her head, and instead of just shaving it, they shave the pattern of his hand out, so she ends up having a pattern of his hand on her head. So then she has to cut her hair to hide it.
Wow.
It's really hilarious. And he's literally sticking to everything. So at one point, he's got her hair stuck to his hand. And like he's looking through the Spider-Man comic book, ripping pages out, because he can't control what he's sticking to. Yeah, it's just, I mean, just the humor is used in a really fun way, but just like, they really ramp up what happens, and they like I said, it's well balanced. They explain everything exactly how you need to.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to do, because Miles doesn't have the death of Uncle Ben to worry about.
Okay.
Because his origin is obviously a little different.
Yeah.
They reference it, obviously. There's even a fun little jape at like the rehashing of that scene where Miles starts to say the line, to Peter B. Parker. He goes, don't finish that sentence. I don't need to hear it right now. Because he's trying, saying, like, hey, we have... Because all Peter B. Parker wants to do is get back to his world.
Uh-huh.
And so he just wants to find Kingpin, find the accelerator, and just go back. And so that's what Miles says to him. He starts to say that line. He was, I don't need to hear it now. That's not what's important. I'm dying. I need to go home. And it's like, okay. And then later, obviously, he starts to become that hero that Miles wants him to be, and he used to be before he let his life go. And so he's willing to actually, because they need someone to stay back to turn the machine off when they all go through, he's going to sacrifice himself. He's going to stay in that universe, because at first they're going to have Miles do it, but Miles just can't control his abilities yet because he's a day into it, or a couple days at one point. So he's like, you know, you're not cut out for it. So they tie him up to a chair in his dorm room at the school, and they're just going to leave him there. And then so he goes, and Peter B. Parker's going to sacrifice himself to let everybody else go back to their universe because he realizes his life is garbage. Even though he is Spider-Man, he's not, he even says to himself he's not even that great of a Spider-Man anymore.
Yeah,
because he just doesn't care anymore. So he's going to do that, and then Miles obviously comes to be the real hero and helps him out and becomes the Spider-Man that everyone he knew he could be and everyone thought he was going to be, but he was just too young and inexperienced.
All right.
So just a real fun. And the last scene is just, they're just throwing off their fucking animation dicks at that point.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Because
yeah.
So when the particle accelerator goes off and they hit and the quantum field opens up, the worlds start to collide. So that's the problem, is they can't control it well enough because they're trying to open up a breach versus going through a breach, and they don't know how to control it. So things start arriving. At one point when they first do it and all the spider beings come through, which they don't know at the time they did because they just shot out of nowhere, random parts of the city are colliding. So at one point there's the same building is inside of itself. Okay. And there's a traffic light that's got all these different hydrants and things stuck to it. And they're all different colors and shapes and designs, realizing they're from multiple universes. Yeah. And they're colliding, and because you can't have mass from one place in the same touching, we all know that, like, the mass can't be there, they start to basically form into one piece. So at one point, and it's funny, because someone goes, is that a Banksy? It's really funny. Yeah. There's these weird little quips through the whole thing. But when it starts to go off the second time, it starts to pull through objects from the other universe.
And it's not just pulling it in and staying it, because they're in that room and everything's, they're just floating through and getting pulled into other ones. And so every world, so you're getting weird different parts of different animation. You're getting things from the cartoony Spider-Ham world are flowing through, and they're having to dodge it and run on it and jump through it and stuff like that. And it's just constantly, the whole scene is just constantly changing and flipping around. There's parts where, like, you don't know what is upside up and upside down, you know what I mean? It's all fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's all different kind of animation, and it's glitchy too, because that's another thing that kind of happens through the movie is like, they explain it as like the character's molecules can't survive in this world, so they look like they're having little glitches every now and then. So in this world where all this crazy shit is flying through and they're dodging it, some of it's glitching out too. Yeah, it's fucking cool, man. It's
very aesthetically pleasing. Yeah, nice. It's like Mike said, it literally embraces the crazy comic book capabilities that live action just can't really do yet. I mean, we're getting some of it, but like the whole world is this way.
Okay.
And it's just like everything's fast paced, and like the way Miles moves, and he's faster than everybody else, but everybody, like, to him, it's just they're walking slow, that sort of thing. You know, when he's running, he's like dodging people, and he's moving real erratic, but they're just walking normal pace. And like he goes, and at one point, like, he's going to be hit by a car, and he flips over it and lands, but he sticks to the ground. And so he's like, shh. But everything around him stays motionless, and he's moving, that sort of thing. And you just, I mean, obviously you can't really do that very well in like live action stuff.
Yeah,
but just like that end scene is just, at one point they're fighting on the side of a building.
Okay.
But you don't know if is the building upright and they're all just that way, or like, because at one point it's him and Kingpin, it's Miles and Kingpin, but they're on the side of a building, but the building's skewed.
Okay.
But because they're trapped inside this like vortex, there's no up or down. Like, if you're standing on something, you're standing on something. And then he can run on the side of something, but obviously Kingpin can't.
Yeah.
But he's like on the side of a building, but yet that's the ground because the building's this way.
Okay.
So like it's so crazy.
Sounds dope.
And then like just like that, the room starts to disappear by being swallowed by this opening like gap in the universes. Okay. And so the control room, which now has a broken window, is seen separately, but the wall is just blank space behind it, and you can see it like encroaching on like his universe, and like, everything's kind of being like pushed and merged together, so you lose reality and physical objects, but like all of a sudden an elevated train comes shooting through, but it doesn't crash, it just literally goes through and then enters another dimension.
Okay.
It's so crazy, and they just, the way they animate it is just phenomenal. Amazingly done.
Wow.
Easily one of the best movies of the year. I would say one of the best animated movies of all time. Definitely one of the best of this year for sure.
Okay.
And I was trying to think back of how many anime movies I saw this year, and I think it was, I haven't seen Wreck-It Ralph. What was the other one? What's something else animated this year? I thought.
I can't remember
either.
What was the Pixar? Wasn't there a Pixar one? Oh, Incredibles.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibles is fantastic. Yeah. This movie outshines it just because of what they did. What they were able to do with it.
Yeah.
And I loved Incredibles, too. I thought it was just as good, if not better, than the first one. But, like, this one is just like, nah, you got some lessons to learn, you know what I mean? And by far, one of the best superhero movies, comic movies you could possibly imagine. Just because it is animated and they can do so much with it. But it takes the animation style is even cool too, the way they kind of make everyone look a little different, but it's just super fun the way they do it, and and it's good for everybody because it has, even though it's PG, and not PG-13, it's PG, it has some really almost edgy kind of like violence in it, but because it's animated, and like at one point Doc Ock pulls out a saw blade out of one of her arms and is going to literally cut Peter B. Parker in half.
Okay.
I was like, how is this PG? She's about to eviscerate, and she doesn't obviously do it,
right?
But it's the intent, like, that's actual violence. But because it's animated, you're like, eh, it's all right.
Then she missed him.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I was like, holy shit, like, there's like a bondage joke in it at one point. Like, I hope those bonds aren't too tight. I was like, what the fuck?
Okay.
Like, it's so weird. I was like, I don't know. I don't think they watch this whole thing. I think the rating board is like, yeah, it's fine. It's PG. It's cartoon.
It's animated, right? Yeah, yeah. Okay. Greenlit.
Yeah.
It's a PG.
It's perfectly fine. Scorpion was in it. That was the other thing, too. Okay, that was one of the villains in it. I was trying to remember, there was another villain. I was like,
so what villains did you have? Obviously, you had a version of, like, Doc Ock. You had a...
So you had Doc Ock, Green Goblin, Tombstone, you had Prowler, Scorpion. Right? There were six, right? Kingpin, Doc Ock, Green Goblin, Tombstone, Prowler, Scorpion. Yeah, okay, that's all six. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Sinister Six. I know there's six. I was like, I know there was. Yeah, because even Scorpion was cool because he's got a Spanish accent, and he's tattooed up, but it makes him look like a luchador. But his like body is very robotic, and the tail's robotic, and he's really buff, and he's just talking mad trash to all the spider beings, and then gets his face kicked in by a girl, and then hit in the face with a cartoon mallet. Yeah, because they really let Spider-Ham be the living cartoon. Uh-huh. So at one point, when a bunch of them have guns and they're shooting at him, he pulls out a giant oversized magnet and pulls the guns out of their hands.
Yeah.
Wow.
When they kind of get their shit together and they're sending different spider people back to where they come from, Spider-Ham starts crying and like tears are flying off his face. He's like, I want you to have this. It's a mallet. It'll fit in your pocket.
And he hands him, and it's like half his size, yeah. Which he's about up to like Miles' knee essentially. And then Miles like, takes it, and I was like, I really want to see him put it, like, he doesn't have a pocket, but he's holding it, and it looks like a cartoon hammer. It's got the swirly wood on the end, and I was like, it's got the, like, that chip out of the edge, like you see in the cartoons, whatever. It was just
I was
so
hoping
fantastic.
He'd use it later.
Yeah.
Like, I was hoping he'd have it just to hit Kingpin in the face or something with it later.
It was so funny. But, like, it's like they really just let them be their own entity inside of it, you know? And there's the one part where, like, I didn't technically cry in this movie. But there's a part where they're fighting and the spider robot that the radioactive spider, because in Penny Parker's universe, nobody got bit by the spider.
Okay.
The spider can communicate with them telepathically. So Peter Parker, her dad, builds a suit for the spider to live in.
Okay.
That then Penny uses, originally was supposed to be for Peter, but he dies in a lab accident. So Penny takes the place of him and uses she rides inside the suit and controls the suit along with the spider, and they use the spider's abilities enhanced through the suit to be Spider-Man.
Okay.
And the suit gets destroyed, but the suit has this like almost like a personality to itself because it has a face that lights up and emotions, and so it's the suit's dying, and she's like, "I'm sorry, I couldn't help." I was like, "Oh my god, like." Don't cry right now. Don't cry right now.
It's a PG-13 movie. I will not cry.
And so the spider comes out of it and gets on her shoulder, and she like they see each other, and like I'm like, oh my god, it's like you realize that the suit was Peter, and so it was her dad. I was like, god damn it, don't cry right now. Like don't. It's a cartoon movie. What is wrong? This isn't Pixar. What's wrong with you? Why do I have emotions right now? So like that's little things like that was super cool. And of course, like obviously, like you see. Spider-Man Noir, just old style boxing people, and like he's at one point you see him standing on something and he's upside down punching people, and I was like, god damn it, they're so clever, like they did such a good job making every spider person, spider being their own uniqueness.
Nice.
And Spider Gwen's talking shit, and she's over there kicking ass and like keeping up with the boys, you know, and it's like. Well done, guys.
They all move differently, too, which was a good touch.
Yeah.
So, like, Gwen is a ballerina.
Yeah, so before she's pirouetting and flipping.
So when she's moving, everything's, like, full extension, nice and tight, very technical. And it's like, oh, yeah. Peter is, like, more free-flowing. Miles is, like, early on, he can't really control it, right? And so it's a pretty neat. The little details all over it is pretty impressive.
Okay.
And it's stuff they don't. They don't blatantly tell you. It's literally just watching it and seeing it happen.
It's much like the different animations.
Yep.
They have the different
because they're styles. Different beings and they have different things. Like Spider-Ham has no fighting capability. He's not over there punching and swinging. He's literally pulling out mallets and hitting people or like swinging people, like grabbing people with the webs and slamming into things.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a fluid fighter or a boxer or anything like this. He's literally just...
Now, did they address any differences like that? You say slinging webs. We obviously have a difference in the Sam Raimi movies. Part of the body, where you have the Andrew Garfield movies where it was an actual device. Did they address stuff like that?
So they stuck with the traditional Spider-Man capabilities. So it was a web shooter,
okay.
A mechanical... you did see the two different versions. You see Peter B. Parker's, which he then ends up giving at first Miles one of his, and then later on Miles gets his own, which are made by his versions of Peter Parker that May gives him that just happened to fit.
They happen to fit.
So you can even see those mechanisms are different.
Mm-hmm.
They fire the same way, you know, palm, you know, but like Gwen's, you never really see them, but you know they're there and they're mechanical.
Okay.
And then Spider-Man. He doesn't really use webs, so whenever he's swinging, he's on somebody else. You know what I mean? It's like Spider-Ham at one point, like just clings in the back of the robot. You know, but yeah, it's really they went through the real traditional way, not to making it like oh he's mutated and has he spins webs out of him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things where. He doesn't have little hairs that lets him stick to things. It's a conscious decision. It's a power he has to be able to. Bond to objects.
Oh god damn it, that scene too. There's a scene where they're breaking in someplace to get information on the particle accelerator, and Peter B. Parker, you know, slips in there doing this thing. Miles still not very good at everything, and he's hanging on the light in an office trying to get down, but he's stuck, and like the bad guys are outside. It's all glass doors, so they're all sitting there talking, and everyone's facing away. And you see Miles hanging upside down from this light, shaking, trying to get it done. And Peter Parker's like, dude, shut up. You're being too loud. The bad guys are right outside. And he's yelling at him. He's like, you need to just relax. He's like, I'm trying to relax. It won't come off. And he's like freaking out. He's like, what do you do to relax? And he's sitting there, and he's moving around, and then he stops, and it's a little bit of a callback from earlier where he starts singing a song. He's like, really? This is what you do to relax? And like one finger comes off at a time, then he just falls. It's so good, dude.
And then all of a sudden he discovers his invisibility because he turns invisible. He goes, where'd you go? Like, what's happening right now? He's like, do you not have this or something like that? And he goes, no, just stay there. It's fine. Leave it. And then he's like, and then he hears something, so she comes in, and this is before you realize it's Dr. Ock, Liv to her friends, and she's like, oh, a Spider-Man, and she like instantly knows, like, oh, this, you must not be our Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And at this point she doesn't see Miles because he's invisible, and so like Peter's distracting her, and he's like, get the computer, like so you see Miles go over and he grabs the computer. But he's invisible, but yeah. The computer isn't, and he has the monitor in the tower, and they start to run, and then Peter's fighting with her, and then all these different things, and so he's running away, and so you see a computer monitor and a computer tower running down the hallway, and Peter keeps flying in and out of the scene because he gets thrown through a wall, and then crashes through another wall, and then he's like, he finally catches up to him, he's like, oh, you don't need this, and he drops the monitor, and you hear her go, but they're proprietary! And then they basically run into Gwen, who's working at the lab.
Uh-huh.
And that's when like she becomes, you see her finally as Spider-Gwen, because she catches up to him in the forest after they're running away, and she's in the white with the pink and everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like there's the like they're like on the fly trying, he's trying to teach Miles how to swing with the webs, so he's like, thwip and release. Thwip and release.
Double thrip to release.
Yeah.
And so thrip one to shoot, double thrip to release.
Yep.
And so he gets the momentum going, and he's all like, all right, release, swing. Release, swing.
So they're holding, each of them have one hand on the computer, and they're both swinging like they would normally be doing with like two hands, but it's the two of them in tandem. And
holding the monitor between the two of them.
Yeah, the tower between the two of them. And so it's so funny. Because then it's like there's this big fight and they start getting attacked and like Miles starts to lose it and like his concentration, he's falling, and it's just, and Gwen comes in and saves the day, and it's just hilarious.
All right.
Yeah, Gwen Gwandi Stacy is her name. When she gives, she's like, Gwanda. And he's like, Gwanda? Yeah, I'm from Africa. South Africa. I'm from South Africa. It's so funny. It's just so amazingly hilarious. But it's just, I mean, it's so good.
All right. So it sounds like something definitely I'll get around to watching.
Way better than it has any right to be, by the way. Way better.
Yeah. I was just hoping it'd be fun. You know what I mean? Right. Like, yeah. And I was just like, what the fuck? How is this so good?
All right.
It's true. It is phenomenal. What's our time?
We're right there.
We are right there. Yeah, we'll skip over talking about Hellboy this week.
Yeah, we can always talk about it next week.
Yeah.
I did want to point out that, and Cody probably already knows, maybe Mike doesn't, they are going to be launching a new Spider-Man spring of next year called Spider-Man Life Story. I thought it would be interesting to mention just because it takes place from the original Spider-Man from 1966. And it stays with that Spider-Man. So the whole story is going to be Spider-Man throughout the years as he gets older and just stays with him.
Hmm.
So I thought that would be interesting to read.
Yeah.
And point out for those who like Spider-Man and want something new, hopefully next year. It's going to be written by Chip Zdarsky, who's already doing the Spectacular Spider-Man run right now. And the art from Amazing Spider-Man's Mark Bagley.
Oh, Mark Bagley, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the one doing the Spider-Man right now with Otley? Who's that writer?
Nick Spencer.
Spencer.
Yeah.
Nick Spencer. That run's fucking great.
Yeah.
Ah, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are looking to get into any type of Spider-Man comics, that trade just recently came out. I bought the first two single issues just because, like, on the big comics, I like grabbing the first couple.
Yeah.
And then the covers were spectacular.
Amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, sorry. Good. But I finally bought the trade. It covers the first five issues and the story. It's really, really good. It's awesome. one of the better comics I've read as of late.
Yeah, issue one was phenomenal because it was like this, like them, they got, like, Ryan Otley got to draw all the Avengers, but also got to do it felt very much like an Invincible issue because like Mysterio's in it and like there's these crazy slime creatures and these, like, it's just super amount of fun. And then like the end of issue one, because it's like a double issue, mm-hmm. So it's just like six books versus even five. They instantly go into like what's going on, and there's like a second Spider-Man.
Okay,
because Peter, like, it's a continuation of what's been happening in the other Spider-Man runs. It's not like starting over.
Yeah.
It's just a new story arc. So like Pete, like all the stuff that's happened in Peter's past, it still happens in Peter's past. It's just a new artist, a new author. So like they pay off all of that stuff. But like something from the past, from the time where Doc Ock was in his body, comes back to bite him in the ass, and so that happens, and it's just a fun way of doing it. But it's a really good story arc to go through.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. But I think that's it for this week's episode, everybody. So tune in next week. I'm going to give a little preview of what we have planned.
Uh-oh.
It's our wrap-up episode, even though it's not the last episode of the year.
Yeah, but I was looking at
Mike
it.
Mike wants to
all
do
the
it.
Movies oh, are, shit. All the movies are
going
to be out.
It is our work. You do. We are going to be going over our top It'll 10 be the movies.
Last episode that airs of the year.
No, it won't be.
Yeah, it will.
Oh, it will be, yeah, because that's the 28th,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the next one will be the second. So yeah, fuck you.
Yeah,
we're good.
Yeah, like I said, we'll be doing our top 10 movies of the year, which means Joe actually has to go back and recount.
Watch three more movies.
Yeah.
To make sure he has.
And 10. Cody will have to whittle down his list.
Oh, ooh. I did not say that. No, I did not say that. I will give a.
I'm
top
coming
10.
In. I was telling Cody
with
I'm,
a shit ton of honorable mentions.
Yes,
I guarantee that it'll be.
See, Mike says it's okay.
As long as, but you can't talk about the honorable mentions.
Oh, I can't. Yes, listen. I will.
No, you will not.
I will.
We will not.
You will.
I'll buzz you.
Buzz
we'll have
me.
A buzzer, and you'll be done.
And you'll get slapped.
You can't reach across the table.
Afterwards.
That's true.
Every time you buzz me, you get a slap.
I'd like to see you I'm try, a bitch.
Tick.
I'm going to try to see, bitch.
I got buzzed 15
but I'm,
times.
But I'm coming in. I'm coming in with notes.
He says that now.
I'm going to be prepared like a motherfucker. Y'all, you're going to be like, last couple minutes, what movies came out this year? Looking on your iPads. I'm going to be like, whatever, I got it on, you know.
Yeah.
Index cards or something. I don't know. I'll have something.
Michael Index prepared cards. Owen.
Yeah. Prepared. Middle name. You just said it right now. Killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tune anyway. In next week. Listen to me be fucking prepared and these guys be assholes. Boom.
I don't think
those things is going to be right.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be the asshole part. We'll fucking see if someone's prepared. But yeah, that's it. Comes naturally. We are
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. And as usual, you fuckers just came naturally.
How do you guys do research? What's the best way?
Wikipedia.